Welcome to Leadership Decoded, a podcast where through insights and interviews, I explore what good leadership looks like. My main aim is to keep the podcast long enough to cover the subject, but short enough to create interest without those annoying adverts. So sit back and enjoy this episode of Leadership Decoded. Welcome back to a new season, a new approach. Yes, it's been a while. And I recognize that even though I have been hassled by some friends about this, it has taken me a while to get back here, but here I am. And the your favorite podcast about leadership communication is back on the air, but it has changed name, as you would have guessed. This is no longer the David McQueen Show, which although I thought was rather cool at the time when I first did it and it made me feel really well, was not really the essence of how I wanted to serve people. And so I've changed the name of the podcast to the Leadership Decoded, or to Leadership Decoded even, to emphasize that this is more about how do I serve individuals who are either already in positions of leadership or aspiring to be through really good tips and guidance and interviews and insights around leadership communication. And so that's where we are at. And I'm really excited to be back here for this new season. I will be providing a mixture of insights where I will talk for, not too long. And then I will be interviewing a number of individuals who I am quite excited about the journeys that they take, whether they are authors, individuals who are researchers around leadership, others who are doing a lot of great work as consultants and advisors in this space. And then most importantly, individuals who are involved in the day-to-day running of teams and organizations and demonstrate their own leadership stories. Now, I know in the last season and the last time we recorded this, there were quite a few, about four or five people who I was able to interview who I liked. I don't want to get any famous people on here. So for any of the ones who've been on here before, that's no insult to you. But I don't want to have that whole celebrity kind of out of the reach of individuals. I want people who are quite down to earth and people who are really excited about doing, but they're not just about trying to flog a book or trying to get onto a TED talk or whatever the equivalent is. This is just about the day-to-day work that they do. So here we are, and I'm really excited about this. And in this episode, in today's episode, I want to talk about one of the things that's very dear to my heart and something that's really misunderstood. I want to talk about resilience. And I want to talk about it specifically because I've called this one Resilience is a Team Sport. And the reason why I have been able to put together why I've been really passionate about being able to put together this episode is primarily because of the amount of discussion I see that people have around resilience, where I think people are really misguided. They don't seem to have an understanding of what it really is to be resilient in the workplace or be resilient full stop. And too often, what it ends up being is, it ends up being the real stereotypical. The real sense of that you've got to be kind of a superhero or really kind of, this responsibility that you need to toughen up or man up or whatever the phrases are to grow a pair, all those kinds of pejorative terms in order to have a sense of individual resilience. What I want to do is I want to shake that up a bit. I want to challenge that. And so for me, I want to take it on a three-part journey on here. The first one, I want to talk about what individual resilience is. I want to talk about how we then think about resilience within the context of a group context, and then just really just seeing how does it work practically. So as a coach, and many people do know me as a leadership coach, even though primarily I think my first foray into this space has been as a speaker, I have been really working hard with my team around the concept of my leadership coaching being what drives all the stuff I do around Leadership Decoded. And so I get to speak to quite a lot of individuals, whether it's one-to-one when I'm working with senior leaders or middle leaders. Sometimes it might be when I'm working with a group. So away days, retreats, managing board meetings. And one of the things I've been doing quite a lot is working with senior stakeholders, especially around change programs that they may have in their organization. And a lot of the times, resilience always comes up. How can we make our teams more resilient? How can I make a member of staff more resilient? How is it that I can get somebody to not be so offended so easily or not to be feel that they are not really contributing in the way that they should be? How do I get individuals to recognize that they are not imposters and to really dig deep into what it is that they do and how they celebrate their art and themselves? And often the term that is bandied about is this real understanding or misunderstanding, should I say, about what resilience actually is and what it means. And so I'm just pulling up on my screen now because I think it's important to have a concrete definition that we can work from. And there are two definitions when I type it into Google that says, first and foremost, resilience is a noun, is the capacity to recover quickly from difficulties or toughness. And a secondary one here is the ability of a substance or an object to spring back into shape and to have a sense of elasticity. And so for the purpose of this podcast, I think both of these things actually apply. Being able to have that capacity to recover quickly from difficulties and the ability or substance to be able to spring back into shape. That for me is what resilience is about. It's recognizing that sometimes shit's going to hit the fan. Sometimes you are going to get the times where you're going to really have challenges in your workplace, whether you work individually or work as part of a small team, and how you deal with those knockbacks are going to be really important. I share the story often of myself when in the early 2000s, I lost my business. And in the space of that time, there were a couple of other things that happened. We lost our house, lost a member of family. So many things happened in there. And for me, looking back on it, I didn't realize it at the time. I didn't have a word per se, or I didn't really understand the concept of resilience in the way that I do now. But what I was able to do was bounce back. And there have been other individuals who I've spoken to along my journey who I've realized have had some really, really tough times and sometimes similar. And they have not been able to bounce back. They have not been able to reframe the way that they have seen things and come back a lot stronger. And for me, I've often queried, how is it that, you know, there are, I think one of historically one of my favorite professional speakers was Les Brown. And Les Brown, if you've ever heard his story, he talks about his mother and where they were living in America and how it was really tough and how he was able to use the experience of seeing his mother's toughness and being able to bounce back. But one of the parts of the story was that his brother never did the same as him. He was the one who tended to stand out. And I'm always really intrigued as to how is it that one person can really fire up and do really well and be able to bounce back, but others can't. How is it that in a family, a certain amount of children can go on to be their parents can be really excited about how they've achieved academically or vocationally or in terms of relationship. And another child could just be in the same environment and end up not having the same kind of outcome. And while I was on my journey of really trying to discover this thing about resilience, I came across a couple of studies where psychologists had, you know, tried to find out themselves what was the core, what was the underlying reason as to why people were able to have that sense of resilience and have that sense of strength as to what it is they're going to do. And it so happened that some of it can be genetic. Some of it can be passed on, a sense of resilience can be passed on from the gene code, but you're not limited by it. And that was the bit that excited me most. That even though there may be those who have a propensity to be able to bounce back quicker, it's not limited to just being in the gene pool. It's just because if it was, then we're screwed, really, aren't we? But if we're just not genetically disposed to be able to do that, then we're done. And I think on the one hand, you can look at, I think his name is David Goggins, is the former Navy SEAL and Army guy who has his book about being running ultra marathons, even though he had torn ligaments, being able to do these pull-ups because he believed his mind was the thing that really helped him to take it to the next level. And there are people who will buy into that narrative, like, you know, this guy's really strong, he's got his mind, he's been able to do it, and really admire that. And then there's Wim Hof, the guy who's been able to take his body and immerse himself in some very cold water and temperatures that would probably kill most humans. And again, he's been able to say that he's been able to do this because his mind is strong. And then, of course, there are the countless motivational speakers who get people to walk over fire coals, which I find a load of bollocks myself personally. But, you know, as a metaphor to get people to understand how they can change their mind and then be resilient. Now, I say this to say that individual cases are not necessarily the norm. Because if we think of things like genocides that have happened in many countries, be they in Nazi Germany in the middle of the last century, or be they in Rwanda towards the end of the last century, there were individuals who were able to come out of these situations and were able to be quite strong. I think post me recording this, I think that in the UK there will be some celebration of the Holocaust Memorial. And I remember one of the most powerful books for me was a book, I think the guy's name was Viktor Frankl, and the book was called Man's Search for Meaning. And he was able to describe in his own way how he was able to endure the Holocaust because of his way of thinking. He was in the frame of mind that this wasn't the only thing for him. There was just no way that the Holocaust was going to be the end of his actual days. And he talks about that much in the book for those of you who have ever read it. And obviously, I'm going to recommend it as part of the show notes. But it's an amazing perspective in this thing for Man's Search for Meaning, where he was able to disassociate himself from the barbarity or the barbarism of what was around him to say, look, you know, when I leave this place, I'm really going to teach people about the power of health and the power of community and being able to speak to individuals. And he wasn't the only one. There were a number of individuals who left and who were able to survive the Holocaust. And I think the phrase that was used, it was the plastic shield. This is used both for Holocaust survivors in World War II, and it's also been applied to many eras where they've had genocide or mass destruction of communities since, as I said before, like Rwanda. And this plastic shield apparently is what the individuals have to gain a sense of perspective and see it differently. In many instances, a lot of people who have been resilient have had, or who are resilient both in times of real crisis and in, you know, in times of war as well as in work, apparently they all have a really decent sense of humor as well and are able to laugh at life and not take themselves or things around them too seriously. Now, obviously, if you're in the middle of a genocidal war, there's a question of perspective on that. But generally speaking, these seem to be the rules around those who tend to have a plastic shield around them. And I know that I've seen it as a coach and obviously working in the corporate world before I came out to do my own thing. There were individuals who allowed stuff to just bounce off them. They would be the calm person in a storm. They would be the ones who would say, right, you know what, we're going to be able to take a step back from this. Yes, there are going to be some challenging points that we have to address in this, but we need to step back and recognize what is the perspective we have around this and how do we move it forward. I think it's really important at this point as well to not confuse resilience with optimism, because there are lots of people who can do happy chants and can have the meditatory bits and what have you. But being optimistic about something is not about resilience, because very obviously optimism is about this trying to keep happy in the moment and saying, you know, rainbows and unicorns and everything's going to be all right. And no matter what life throws at you, you know, you're going to be absolutely, it's going to be happy. And I don't necessarily think that's what resilience is about. Resilience is recognizing that, look, shit happens. And sometimes things are going to happen when it will affect your mood and it will affect the way that you operate. But when you start to look at it from a bigger picture, you're thinking, okay, how do I manage this? Rather than just thinking about, let me just smile and everybody will be happy and let's sing a song or, you know, clap and dance and what have you. This is more about something has happened and it has really changed our perspective. We've lost a client account. A spreadsheet has crashed and nobody has backed it up. We need to be able to file this report. There's been racial discrimination or real lack of diversity in the office. How do we are we able to react in these actual situations? And that, for me, is where resilience comes in. You realize this is happening, but how do I take a step back from this and give it that eagle-eye view where I look down or I come out of the situation and remove the sense of emotion that will stop me from moving forward and think logically, start to change my heuristics and my mental models and start to think about how I'm going to be able to do this slightly differently. And so that individual resilience bit is something that I think you'll only know when you've actually had the pressure. How will you know that you'll be able to drive through a certain situation? Well, sometimes you don't know. And very often the best gauge we have or marker we have of how we'll survive in those situations is because of the experience that we've had already. You know, are you going to be the person if you see an accident? Are you going to be the person trying to calm everybody down and then try to obviously make the major attention to the person who's been injured, or you're going to be the person who pulls out the phone and has a big panic and starts wailing and screaming. Some of these things are cues as to how we will be able to react. But in all honesty, the research and sometimes the anecdotal experience says that a lot of resilience is just about context, because sometimes we can react positively in one way, but we may absolutely lose our shit in another one. And so individual resilience is a is something that some of us may be genetically genetically defined to be able to respond to in a certain way. But in the larger scheme of things, there is a bit of learned behavior that we can have around resilience as well. So this leads me to the second point, creating group resilience. How do we do this? And as I always say, my passion and my enthusiasm and curiosity is around the conditions that make for good leadership, whether that's one of title, whether you're leading a team or organization, or whether that leadership is being the individual that's going to create a vision and a point that you're actually going to move towards, and people will trust you enough for you to be able to take them there. And as such, this is where I think a lot of good leadership is demonstrated, when we start to think about how you can create resilient teams. Individual resilience is good, but as I found in so many instances, it doesn't necessarily stay as long unless you have a support framework around it. So you still need to have that framework. What leaders can actually do in this situation is create space for honest conversations. And too often, there are individuals who are afraid of having honest conversations at work. They're afraid of being able to have conflict. The amount of times when I travel and I go in and deliver workshops and I facilitate leadership and away days and offsites, to find that there are individuals that are afraid of having confrontation. That, for example, if you come from a background where you have low conflict, going into spaces where there will be confrontation can be quite jarring. Or if you are coming from a background where there has been a lot of conflict, there has been a lot of instability in terms of family or community or work life, then the whole concept of conflict can be problematic, especially if you know that how you may react. You may retreat, or you may react quite badly to those situations. And for me, a really great leader, and this is my part of this is where I get really excited about decoding what makes for a really great leader, is the ability to create that space. There are so many people who are afraid of having really honest conversations. People don't like getting feedback. People don't like to offend people or upset individuals. And I remember there was a statement that I had, I think I shared it with a group last week, where I said, you know, look, I cannot take responsibility for your response. What I can do is I can shape the tone for the conversation. I can start to ask different questions. I can make sure that when I am guiding you as a leader, that when we do create a space for conversation that might be quite tense, I can say, look, we are going to be able to create a platform here where we speak freely, where we are respectful of each other. But if there is a need to be challenged, we can obviously go and address that. That doesn't mean that the work to do that is easy, but one of the best ways of being able to create that workplace resilience is being able to encourage and be able to build some space around creating those spaces so that people can speak freely. Because if you are an individual who holds that stuff in, and if you then become resentful of other people, and then it just culminates in you just blowing up and no one knows, where the hell did that come from? Why are you so angry on a certain day? If there aren't spaces for those conversations, then that's what actually happens. And that's when we go from 0 to 100 instead of 0 to 5 when we're actually managing the conflict. Another thing is to make sure that we get our teams to look out for each other at work. And what that means is, you know, sometimes we can ask people, how are you? And we know that things aren't right. And it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to be up in people's business, but just to say, you know, look, if I can just get somebody a cup of coffee, or somebody's crying, I can get them a tissue and gently encourage them to go to the bathroom if they need to without asking them, what's wrong? Are you okay? And being too intrusive, it might be just being able to just look out. For example, you know, a parent may need to be able to go and pick up their child from school or being able to attend an event, and you're working in that team, and you can go, do you know what, I'll hold some slack for you for now in order for you to be able to do that. Or, you know, anything else might happen where somebody, say for the sake of argument, somebody might have raised a point in a meeting or in a group discussion, and somebody will take credit for that. And looking out for that person, you can go, well, you know, I know that a lot of people have congratulated, you know, Simon or Susan for saying that point, but the reality is the point was made first by, I'm trying to find another S now, Spencer, okay? So it's important that we amplify the voice of that person who are often maybe introvert and maybe holding back so they don't necessarily say as much. How do we make sure that we look out for those people at work? The one that I really like is to say thank you for a job well done. Now, lots of people are like, well, if you're getting paid for a job, why should people say thank you? But I believe you know when people have gone over and above and really done some stuff that has really impacted. And I think there's nothing wrong with saying thank you. The flip side is that people are very are not very good at taking compliments across the board. And especially they don't think that you as an individual are being genuine, and they don't think that the environment is genuinely encouraging that. Then people will hold back. But being able to say thank you is part and parcel of encouraging people. It builds confidence. One of the things I always talk about as a speaker is that when you are good at accepting compliments, it allows you to be able to build the confidence, that your internal confidence and your ability to be able to go, do you know what, at least it's not just in my head because other people have seen what's being done and, you know, what's being done really well. And there are two more points I want to talk about being able to create that kind of group resilience, which taps into your individual resilience. And it's this: not enough is done in organizations about manuals and processes. Now, this is the nerdy side of me. For those of you who don't know, I used to be an accountant for 8 years, and then I worked in IT for about another 5. And one of the things that really drove me bananas in teams and working with teams was when there was not capturing of the data of a specific process or how things worked. So I love to be able to go and discover stuff. How does this work? And people would be like, you know, you just go and do it, Dave. I go, no, how does it work? And when I found out how it was work, I was able to document that stuff. And being able to document that and have manuals and processes allows people to realize, look, there's something that you can go to. In a state of emergency, when we have a little bit of a crisis, when something goes wrong, and again, as I said, you know, emotions are shot, we're all over the place, having manuals and processes are great ways of being able to go back and go, right, this is what we do. And if you think about really high security industries where people are dealing with, utilities or chemicals or things that can have a really massive impact on not just a company, but the wider community if it goes wrong, you will notice that in those industries, there's a hell of a lot of work that's done around compliance and manuals and processes and procedures. And what it means is that in the moment when our emotions are going all over the place, we can actually go back and look at some stuff and go, right, if this has happened, what do we do? What do we have in terms of a manual or a process? Right, did you do a backup? Okay, did you go through these 3 steps in terms of health and safety? Right, did you have a conversation with the line manager who was 2 levels above you? All these things, when we capture them, are absolutely incredibly important in reducing stress, but also reinforcing that we have a sense of resilience. And then the last one for me on this is about debriefing. If you've had an emergency, if things gone wrong, if it's gone a bit to pot and you're really kind of wondering, you know, how you can be able to bounce back, having a debrief is incredible. Because what it allows you to do, again, coming back to the first point I made about creating the group resilience, is that you've created a space. And when you have that, creating that space for honest conversations, and then you have a debrief at the end, you can go, okay, what went right? And you can explore. These are the things that I have this thing called the win formula. And it's a way that I use to really reinforce camaraderie and honest feedback. So I go, what went well? Or, you know, what worked? And individuals, we go in and we go, right, okay, this is what worked. This was done in this way. This is a process that we had, blah, blah, blah. And then I go, okay, what can improve? Or some people go say, you know, what went wrong? But, you know, I think improve is a different language that you can use to say to people, look, the world isn't over. You know, no one's died here. Well, hopefully in most situations, nobody's actually died. but what can we improve on to make it even better? And by then, the last one is what's notable. So coming back to that thing about saying thank you, what was notable? What stood out for you? How did somebody react to this in a certain way? What did you learn from it yourself? And how would you be able to apply this if an emergency was to raise its head again? These things constantly done with teams, and there's enough research and data out there to show that you do that and you build group resilience. Because look, there are going to be some people in the in your organization that are going to be slightly introverted, who are not going to be the big mouths in a room, but they will do a job well done. And there are going to be other individuals who are going to be the ones who are going to jump into the traffic to save the small child and you know, and still do 10 press-ups afterwards, even though there's all this adrenaline kind of like running through your body thinking, how the hell did they do that? And it's a combination of all those individual resiliences into the team that builds that group resilience. And often what it means is that some people who would normally kind of like shy away or not feel that they're part and parcel of a team process get pulled into the organization, get pulled into the team process. And by default, by proxy, they end up building their resilience as well. So resilience is a team sport. So I finally want to finish off on how this actually works. And there's a formula, and I can't remember the article I got it from. And if it comes back to me, I'll make sure that I put it in the notes. But it was around when you are in a situation where you have to reflect back on your resilience and how resilient you were, there tend to be a couple of things that stand out. So number one is what does reality look like to you? So again, as I say, you know, if you are, and I'm using my own experience here, if you are an accountant and, you know, you find that in reconciling your accounts, you were £2,000 off, you know, in terms of reality, what is it you can be done? I think I read a case the other day of a famous, even though the name's gone from me, a famous retail brand that was something like £58 million overvalued in terms of the way that they reported their stock. Now, that's a crisis. That's a crisis. But the reality is, okay, now that we've done that and, okay, you know, we have screwed up, let's just actually look at that reality. Let's just sit with it for a minute and recognize the impact that it may have on us instead of absolutely losing our mind. And then the second part is about how do we apply meaning to this? What does it actually mean? The truth is that if you are overstating profits or if you are a person who's delivered code that might have made your security system get hacked, the meaning behind it is going to be important because you may lose your job and you may have to think of the impact that it has on other people. So what are you going to put in as a contingency plan to make sure, or what do you have as a disaster recovery plan to make sure that your customers and stakeholders feel secure in working with you? And are really can rest assured that you're going to do something that it doesn't happen like that way again. And then the last one's about flexibility. It's recognizing, yes, sometimes the shit will hit the fan, sometimes something will go down which is really deep, and yes, you would have placed meaning on it, but how do you bounce back from that? And for me, that third part is about flexibility. How flexible are you in being able to deal with that? And very often, the way of being able to deal with this is through one of three ways. And this is dealing with resilience. One of my first ones is about getting some training. And often the reason why training is really good is because it allows you to prepare or to be aware of things in a certain company or organization that you're working for, that things may change. And how will you be able to develop and have a conversation within your teams about how you will cope? So whether it is around defining manuals and processes because you haven't had it before, or whether it is about a chain of command if something really does go wrong, whether it is about being able to step outside of a situation emotionally and think about what are the mental models that you're going to use to make sure that this is done in an effective way. The second one for me is around coaching. And obviously I will say that as a coach, but you know, there are going to be times where as an individual, especially those within leadership, you get put into a position and sometimes people make assumption that you know exactly what needs to be done and that you have all the answers. And one of the beautiful things about coaching is that we are specifically trained and guided around how we ask better questions. And we ask those questions and we set scenarios for you as a leader to start thinking about how you're going to process this stuff very differently. How are you going to move towards a solution? How are you going to be able to encourage your team? How are you still going to be able to take people on that vision or that journey with you so that they trust you fully? And then the third one is therapy. A lot of people don't necessarily like talking about this, but sometimes, you know, if you do have burnout, if you have anxiety, if you have depression, you may need therapy as a form of being able to have some sense of resilience. What it may mean is that in the moment you might be able to dig deep and you might be able to turn out those reports, but you might need a deeper and a more intimate way of being able to overcome some of the negativity or the inner talk that you have in your mind about how you're going to cope. And so training, coaching, and therapy are three things that I believe that organizations should definitely be aware of, not be afraid of investing in, if it makes a difference to you whether or not your teams and your culture as a whole is really resilient. So I want to close by saying this is, again, resilience is a team sport. It's about working together. There are lots of books and memes and, you know, so many things out there in the space when it comes to resilience that just talks about you doing it on your own. I don't believe that. I believe that even if you are genetically disposed to be quite strong in certain situations, even if you do have that plastic shield, resilience is a team sport. It's about being able to take other people with you. It's about being able to see that when you are on a team, what can we do to help each other out? And too often when we hear stories and videos and memes about resilience, it tends to be an individual thing that places the onus on just one person. And that's not healthy for anybody. And for me, it's more about how do we find individuals and squads and mastermind groups and individuals around us who we can speak freely to, but also help us to have a sense of what that resilience actually looks like. And also remember that what works for you may not necessarily work for someone else. Be totally respectful of the lived experience of somebody else. Be totally respectful of the fact that others will approach problems and will approach crises very differently. And often by being able to identify that, it allows you as a lead to be able to go, okay, because this is the way that you approach it, I'm going to leave you with this space or leave you out of this conversation. And then, you know, when we do come back from the briefing, recognize these are the areas that I know you're really strong in, and these are the ones that you may not be so strong in or that you're weak in, and that's absolutely fine. But again, as I said, most importantly, recognize that resilience is a team sport. It's not about you trying to do this thing all on your own. It really is about how do we make sure that we carry people with us, to use a kind of armistice, leave nobody behind. And so I hope you enjoyed this reintroduction into my podcast, my new series, or my rebrand with you with Leadership Decoded. I did mention the book, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. I really highly recommend that. And I'll make sure I put that in the show notes. You can catch this podcast, I believe, on Spotify and iTunes at some point. I think it will go to others, but those are the ones I know at the moment. Thank you for tuning in. If you really did enjoy it, please share it with someone else. And most importantly, please subscribe. My name is Dave McQueen. I'm your host, and it's been an absolute pleasure serving you. Until next time, take care.